my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with the very average Adam Stoker. How are you, Adam Stoker?
Do you know, it's funny you say that, Stuart. I am 5'11", slightly overweight. I'm 42 years old. I am the average American male.
Yeah, you're like the vanilla ice cream of the American males. Yeah, I mean, I was trying to think of a good adjective for you today. You know, you were a little old, Adam, last time, and today. I just figured, you know, what word comes to mind? It was average, so in every way.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me, Stuart.
Yeah, I mean, I must be sick or something again. I don't know. I've been... being far too kind and generous with my words of affirmation today, Adam. But I've lost the plot already, and we're already 30 seconds in. We've also got a guest with us today, Stephen Totten. Is it Totten? Totten? How do you pronounce it, Stephen?
It's like Totten. It's like rotten with a T.
Okay, rotten with a T, Stephen.
What a way
Stephen
to describe rotten. Yourself. I love that.
Makes I feel like it a heck of a lot easier. You said that. That's amazing. Yeah. I've got a good friend. Her name, last name is Large. And so when she says that word, it's like people aren't sure if they heard the word large. So she always says large, like the pizza. And everyone gets it straight away.
So there you go.
Totten and rotten. I like it. Stephen, you're with Visit Phoenix. We're going to be out there in a couple of weeks for Esto. So we're excited. I've been there once before, but I'm excited to be there in 120-degree weather. But we should be inside most of the time. So
yes,
we've got a lot to look forward to.
Our lovely friends at the USTA said August is a great time to come out to Phoenix. So we're all going to bring the heat and have a good time together.
Yeah, I'm just going to bring my Speedo, a lot of sunscreen. You know, we'll be.
So just like any other conference.
Pretty much, yeah, pretty much.
You'll be set.
We're ready. And, you know, Adam and I are going to be doing a little session there. We're doing Destination Discourse Live. So hopefully you can attend that and maybe even be a part of it. Who knows? So we shall see. But we're going to be talking about some fun stuff today. We're going to use the phrase navel gazing, which I love as a phrase. But before we get into that, it is the time. Stephen, you're in for a treat. I mean, this is the greatest segment in all of entertainment, especially in the travel medium. But it's time for Stu's News.
What do you think, Stephen? How do you like the jingle?
Hey, got a nice rhythm.
It's growing on you, right?
Okay. Wake me up in my post.
All right, we can cut it.
Should I put
Stephen
in
was,
for old time's sake?
No, that's not. I'm really happy you finally learned to play it once and at the right volume. And you cut it down significantly. So thank you for that. I think
I'm
Stephen
not a quick
was,
learner, but I'm a learner.
You're average. You're an average learner. So, yeah, it rolls. So today, Adam, if you'll indulge me for a second, in the last episode, we indulged you a
just
little
like
bit.
Just like every other episode? Okay, all right,
version,
here we go.
Version 2. We do indulge you a lot of episodes. You're right. So we're going to indulge me for once. For once, we're going to indulge me. But there's a reason for that. So I want to tell the world that we've got a brand new project that just launched, and it's a podcast. And this, to me, is a labor of love. It's a story that we've been working on for three plus years. And since I heard it, I felt like it was the greatest untold American story. And think of the Great Gatsby. But it's set in Myrtle Beach, and it's centered around this African-American gentleman called Charlie Fitzgerald, although that wasn't his original name. And there's a lot of mystery around this gentleman. But in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, he was this larger-than-life, mysterious character that really owned a lot of businesses, had a lot of power, you know, in the Deep South, Jim Crow era. And he became really notorious. And so we wanted to bring this story to light, you know, not just to sort of share that with the world, some of the history of Myrtle Beach in its early years, but also to sort of remind us of our history as well. And so, you know, you and I, Adam, if you remember back 3 or 4 years ago, had a series on your podcast, the Destination Marketing Podcast, where we talked about owned media,
yeah,
at length, and we talked about storytelling at length. And my premise at the time was, we can get more bang for our buck if we tell great stories that are set in our backyard and that we treat them more like they're branded entertainment than they are advertising. And, you know, we've done this kind of thing before. We had a lot of success and continue to have a lot of success with our TV show Traveling the Spectrum. streaming now on Peacock. But now this is the first time we've dabbled with podcasts. We've
Emmy
worked with,
nominated.
That's right. And Telly Award winning, Traveling the Spectrum. But we, we dabbled with some podcasts. And the first few iterations of podcasts we did like every other DMO, but we sort of did a twist. We built the, we told the stories in-house with our own resources. We worked with your team to do the editing and publishing, and they were great, and they got a lot of success, but they never really hit the stratosphere. They never got escape velocity from our sort of sphere of influence. So with this, we wanted to do something differently. So what we did was we partnered with Atlas Obscura. They're a good media partner of ours, and we knew they already knew how to tell stories and that they had an audience. And then they brought in Rococo Punch, who are a dedicated podcast publishing company. And we've been collaborating on this story for a long, long time, for like 3 years, like I said. And finally, we got it to the point where people could start to hear it. And then along came the publisher, Pushkin. Which I don't know if you're familiar with Pushkin, but they're one of the largest publishers in podcasting. They're owned by Malcolm Gladwell and a bunch of other really big heavy hitters. Yeah. And they have a number of really good podcasts. One of my favorite podcasts called Heavyweight is in the Pushkin network. But Pushkin heard the show and said, hey, we want to be attached to this. We want to tell this story. And so that's what Stu's News is today. We just launched episode one, is now freely available everywhere you listen to podcasts. It's called Charlie's Place is the name of the podcast. And if you subscribe to Pushkin Plus, you can actually listen to all six episodes right now. But what I want to tell you is this is sort of the culmination of a lot of the theory we talked about three or four years ago is now coming to fruition in this audio medium. And it's already ranking in the top 10 trending podcasts in the world right now on Amazon. Wow. and on Apple. And we're getting a ton of media inquiries. It's getting a ton of coverage. And so I would encourage everyone to go listen to it because it's a really cool story. But it's doing exactly what we hoped it would do. And then ultimately what we're going to do is any revenue that's generated from it, we're going to invest back into our local community, into Charlie's Place and into the neighborhood where that is set. So it's something that's ultimately not just about telling a good story and driving visitation, but it's also about rejuvenating a part of our community that once was very vibrant and has not been for some time. So it's a fun story, and I wanted to share it with our audience. It's called Charlie's Place. So go listen.
What's really cool about this, Stuart, and it's funny, you and I talk a lot. I didn't realize that today was the day. So really cool to see this come to fruition. I don't know if you remember, but we had dinner, and I believe we were somewhere in Florida, but I can't remember. But we were at a conference. And you talked about how it was your dream to tell this story the way it deserved to be told. And for years, I think it's something that you've been working on. And to actually have been in that conversation where 4 or 5 years ago, you're telling me that this is your dream. And then to see this come to fruition today, that's pretty cool. And really, you and your team have done a really incredible job of priming the pump to be able to tell this story, because I think there's a lot of stakeholders along the way that had you not taken a lot of the baby steps that you did and the small projects that you did and gotten the quick wins and the medium wins to be able to set the table for this, I don't know if it would have happened. And it's really, really cool to see that it's finally coming to fruition.
Thank you. And it's really, we're just getting started. We also are planning a documentary. We're pitching that to streaming services right now. And ultimately, my big long-term dream is that this gets interpreted into some kind of drama series, like an HBO style series around a period piece set in Myrtle Beach, because we believe in the power of media to help us grow awareness in the zeitgeist. So you're right in that we had to do it slowly, right? We had to do it right. We brought in the right people. It was not my story to tell. You know, I'm a white immigrant that came to Myrtle Beach 25 years ago. This is not my story to tell. And, you know, I go all the way back to one of our early episodes, like episode 3 or 4, when we had Sarah Peter on the show. Mm-hmm. And we were talking a lot about storytelling then. And one of the things she said that really resonated and stuck with me is, we don't have to be the storyteller, right? We've already established that. We sometimes are the guide on the story. But sometimes we're just the incubator, right? Sometimes we're the conduit or the catalyst that helps the story get told. And we bring together the right people to actually be the voice to tell the story. And we use our resources. And we had to bring in a lot of people, and we had to build a lot of trust, and we had to build a lot of consensus along the way. And there were hiccups and roadblocks. But I think ultimately, because we took our time, and it wasn't just this is a 2023 budget, right? We said, hey, we're going to put some budget in 23, 24, 25. This long-term planning, which you've talked about on the show before, ultimately we were able to uncover more of the story that we didn't know about through interviews and through archives and other stuff. So we were able to do a lot more research and tell a much more accurate and richer, deeper story. So it's really cool. I hope, you know, by the time this episode actually airs, there'll probably be two or three episodes out. So I'm super excited for the world to hear it and to share their feedback. And we're just getting started, like I said. So it's fun.
That's awesome. Steven, yeah. I know that you don't necessarily have near as much context on this one, but any reaction to that?
Honestly, I think it ties very well into some of the subject matter we'll be discussing today. And so far as you found a niche in your destination and you found a unique way to tell that story. And I think that's really where the strength lies. So kudos to you, especially for having worked on it for so long. It sounds like some creative content, which is nice to see. And in my experience, not common. So yeah, congrats.
Thank you, Stephen. Yeah. And you sort of touch on something that I think is an important part of this, which is, this isn't just sort of a one and done piece, right? We've created this content that's a sort of anchor piece, but now we can create derivative pieces from it. We can do social reels and we can do blog articles and we can bring in influencers and content creators and other people around this centerpiece of the story. And so it's going to have legs that connect back to the community today, even though we're telling the story set like in the 40s and 50s. So it's cool. So let's segue a little bit into the topic. So I know Adam and you, Stephen, had a conversation and he'd shared a little bit about what we're trying to do with this show, which one of the things is it's a therapy session for us, obviously. One of them is that it's a love letter to the industry. And so one of the questions we sort of pose to potential guests is, what is that thing that grinds your gears or gets your goat or really your pet peeve in the industry? What is it that you wish we could do better tomorrow than we do today? And I feel like you had a really good one that you brought to Adam. So I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to sort of tell the folks, the destination out there, what is it that's grinding your gears a little bit and what we're going to be talking about today. So the floor is yours, Stephen.
Absolutely. Thanks, Stuart. I appreciate it. I'm sure we could spend much longer than an hour talking about everything that grinds our gears in the industry. However, I'd say probably one of the main things that is constantly on my mind as I'm talking to peers or looking at the different kind of programming available, talking to our vendors, is that the industry can sometimes feel a lot like an echo chamber or a fishbowl. I think, you know, as the title suggests, we do a lot of navel gazing in this industry. I think we talk about how significant we are to economic development and our environment and how much great work we're doing. But oftentimes you'll see a lot of cookie cutter products and a lot of cookie cutter results. And so it feels like a lot of the showboating that we do is in vain. And it's been a big point of frustration for me since I've been in the industry.
Yeah. So the sea of sameness, and it's something I know, Adam, you've spoken about a lot about how if we're competing with the same ideas, it's really just going to come down to resources. So we've got to compete on a different level, and maybe that's creativity or something else. But any initial thoughts, Adam?
Well, I enjoyed my initial conversation with Steven that led to this, because I think he echoed a lot of the sentiment that I think you and I have shared on this show. I do think it would be kind of funny to actually dissect the term navel gazing and try to guess what the origin of that phrase is, because it's just a funny string of words. But I really do, Steven, agree with you that if everybody's doing the same thing and just has a different budget, same media plan, same creative with a different headline, I mean, you're really ending up in the same place. And honestly, you're not being a good financial steward of the money that you're being allocated. And so, you know, a great example of the alternative is Stuart just shared it with what they're doing with Charlie's Place, right? Or what they've done with Traveling the Spectrum in Myrtle Beach. And that doesn't happen unless you're willing to think differently. And it can't happen. And this may sound like a self-serving statement, but I'm just going to say it. If everybody's using the exact same vendors in the space or the same three vendors in the space, you're destined to have the exact same plan. And I think there's a lot of good intentions. I think there's a lot of hard work that's gone into a lot of the campaigns that have been created. But the end result is if the same team is doing the same thing for different destinations, there's no question you're going to end up with duplication, repurposing. And my guess is there's a lot of destinations who have seen ideas that they've turned down for their destination show up as the primary campaign for another destination within a year later. And I think somebody's got to be willing to think different and do it differently. And it sounds like, Stephen, that's what you're suggesting.
100%. Couldn't have said it better myself. Yes, the industry, you know, there's a lot of the same players in the game, and they've found a model that works. And so they've decided to repeat that model 10 times over with every single destination they interact with. And it's become so insulary from my observations that we've almost backtracked. When you look at a lot of other creatively flavored industries where you have to put out an important message, try to sway people's opinions, even just the systems that are available to us in this industry are somewhat limited when you look outside of tourism and hospitality. You know, they're are all sorts of revolutionary, innovative practices happening across the board. And yeah, to be honest, you don't see that a lot here.
Can I stop you on that one? And I just this is for clarity specifically. I want you to identify a couple of the places where this industry doesn't have the, I guess, creative ability or the extensive of resources, extensive or the extent of resources that are available compared to some of these other industries. What are some examples of that that you could maybe point out for us?
Well, I think most of it falls into their creative efforts, and particularly the relationships we have with creative agencies. Because of the limited resources that a lot of DMOs have, we tend to outsource a lot of our efforts to third parties, namely in the creative space. And there are a couple big players that have somewhat monopolized this industry, and they found a campaign that works for one destination, and that's the same campaign they're going to use for every single destination. I think the same applies to our digital presences, our websites, our social tools, our engagement tools for audiences. Those are certainly the two that stay at top of my mind.
So can I push back on you guys a little bit? Because I feel like we're sort of pointing the finger a little bit at the agencies, and that may be a fair criticism. There's
Hold on,
certainly
hold
sort
on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Are
Yes,
you about to defend
I
agencies?
am.
I just want to
I
make
am.
sure that this moment is correctly documented and that we understand what we're about to get ourselves into.
Yes, 100%. This might be a new me, new title, new role.
This
I
could
don't
be a
know.
new
Maybe I'm feeling
segment.
more diplomatic. Yeah, and maybe if we go back to previous episodes, I'm contradicting myself a little bit. But for the sake of argument, right? It sounds to me like you guys are both saying like there's a handful of agencies, and they obviously have massive scale, right? They have a lot of clients, in some cases hundreds of clients. There's also a lot of destinations that are using the smaller boutique agencies that I think are having similar struggles, right? They're also so I don't know that it's necessarily the agency's fault. I mean, obviously, I came from the agency world. There's an incentive for an agency to try to scale and try to create repeatable processes because there's not big margins in the agency world. I mean, you Adam know this better than most, right? It's a slog, and so
Yes.
any way you can find efficiencies, you're gonna try to find it. I would say, in my experience, and we work with a lot of agencies, and some of them are the big guys, right? Some of them are the small guys. And when I came in, a little bit like a bull in a china shop, a little bit of a troublemaker, I really struggled with some of our agencies early on. And some of it was the team, the individuals that were on the team didn't quite see our vision or were a little scared or intimidated by the vision. But all of them were sort of conditioned over time by their clients to play it safe. Because DMOs, and we've talked about this a lot on the shows, DMOs don't like to take risks, right? There's a lot of inherent risk for our position, our funding, our own employment, if we put our necks out there and try something that maybe doesn't work. And so I would argue it may be that the agencies want to be more creative and want to take more risks, at least the ones I work with. And yet, for the majority of their clients, they're not pushing them to do that. And so we sort of find this equilibrium point where no one's pushing each other because everyone's sort of incentivized to play it safe. The agency certainly doesn't want to take a risk and end up getting RFP'd because as soon as something goes wrong, the employees of the DMO are going to go to the board and say, "Hey, guys, the agency, they screwed up. We need a new agency," right? It's an easy cop out. So I don't know that it's entirely fair to blame the agencies myself. I think they're culpable. I think they're a part of the problem, but I think this is a bigger systemic problem
Yeah.
within the industry personally.
Well, and Stephen, correct me if I'm wrong, because I want to make sure that I'm not misrepresenting what you're saying. While you and I are criticizing the end result, I personally am not, and by the way, it would not be in my best interest to do so, not putting fault on the agencies for the end result that's there. I actually think that one of the major issues that we have in our space specifically that I've witnessed over and over and over again is when destinations outsource vision to the agency. If you outsource vision to the agency, you are the problem. And I actually had a podcast that I did earlier on the Destination Marketing Podcast today, and I likened it to you and some of your key stakeholders being in a car together, and you pull over to ask for directions, and the person says, "Well, where do you want to go?" And everybody just looks at each other. You got a big problem, right? You got to know where you're going, or the agency's never going to be able to help you get there. And I think there's too much outsourcing of vision and organizational strategy in the destination space specifically.
I would agree with you 100%. And you know what, Stuart, I agree with you as well. I think you made some strong points. It's not the agency's fault that we're this way. It really is. I think we can place blame on the industry as a whole. I think every party in the industry is culpable to an extent, and risk mitigation is a huge factor of that. Now, granted, some DMOs across the world have limited resources, and so that kind of forces them to outsource their efforts and, in part, their vision. And so that's part of the issue. But I think risk mitigation and ultimately fear is what is causing a lot of these issues. Part of that is because of the conditioning between the agencies and the DMOs. We're going to play it safe. We know what people like. The clinking of the margarita glass, diving in the pool, looking out at the mountain summit, that plays safe across any DMO you go to. So we'll do that. And if I'm being honest, I think part of this expansion of the risk mitigation and the fear is because of where a lot of the industry is based off of or where it stems from. So, in my perspective, DMO tourism industry is usually stemmed from one of two other industries. One of them is hospitality, and the other is local government. Both of those industries are probably have the highest ranking of risk mitigation compared to any other industry. If you look at hospitality, it's what corporate wants. This is how you're going to play the creative. This is how you're going to close this deal. There is a playbook to everything. Same with local government. It's all red tape and bureaucracy. You got to get stuff approved over and over and over again before you can even take one step in the right direction. And because that's where so many of our peers got their start, or that's where their experiences stem from, I think that risk mitigation continues. So DMOs, as well as every other player in this industry, I think is completely culpable for this pattern that we're seeing. But I would temper that with this other statement that, from my perspective, DMOs are kind of it's the Wild West in a lot of ways. We're funded all in unique ways. We are all structured in unique ways. And while that can be a hindrance in a lot of aspects, I think it's also an advantage because we're not tied to the rules and regulations of the hospitality corporate overlords. And we're also not always necessarily tied to the bureaucracy of local government. We have a little bit more freedom to do whatever we want. And that gives us a lot of opportunity. However, I think that does create some oversaturation and some fear as a result.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's interesting because the most creative folks that I come across in the industry are folks that have come from far outside. You're right. Like I came from hospitality before. I was in the hotel on the agency side, but we did a lot of work prior to that in the online retail side. And I apply a lot more of what I learned in my early years from the online retail side to drive innovation now here, because I always said when I went from online retail to hotels, it was like I was going back in time 5 or 6 years. And then when I went from hotels to DMOs, it was like I was going back another 5 or 6 years. So I really do think in some ways the DMO space is 10 years behind online retail. And I understand why. Like we've talked about this on the show before. We don't control the experience, the product, right? And we don't control the transaction. And so it's difficult for us to even measure, well, it's difficult for us to define, let alone measure success on a marketing campaign. And we had a great conversation last episode about this, about are we, you know, we can't treat all measurement the same. We can't agree that certain campaigns are outperforming other campaigns when our objectives are different. But what I think what's surprising me and where I'm trying to figure out a few things in our industry is, one, why don't we as an industry look outside ourselves more? Like, why aren't like the ESTOs of the world in the big conferences, the DI National Convention, why aren't we bringing in more outsiders? Why are we listening to ourselves all the time and just looking at case studies that we've all done, right? And it would be interesting for a dedicated travel and tourism conference to really focus on that, to really bring in outside perspectives, but to make it tangible to us. So that's interesting to me. And then why don't we sort of come together to form some kind of consensus on certain things? Like every DMO is funded slightly differently. That's kind of weird, right? Everyone is structured kind of differently. That's kind of weird, right? I just went through an exercise with my team where I asked someone to go and look at the internal org structure for about a dozen different DMOs. You know, we're going through a transition right now. We're sort of really redefining. We're a chamber and a CVB, and so we're really deep redefining the roles of the chamber and CVB separately, even though we're under one umbrella. And so it's an opportunity for us to start from first principles and sort of say, well, what would we do differently if we were starting fresh today? And so we're looking at other DMOs and their org structures. I've looked at more than a dozen. There's not two that are even close in how they're structured. Not even close, you know, in terms of even ratios of how many people they have in admin versus sales versus marketing. Even the titles are different. You got people like doubling down on experience. You got it's just wild that there's no consensus, you know? So it's weird that we're so focused on like these sort of almost superficial things like how we express ourselves externally. Like this whole conversation around, are we a DMO, are we a DMMO, are we a DO or a DSO? It's like we're so focused on the wand and we're not really focused on the wizard and like who are we at the core in a way, because we're arguing semantics and silly stuff. So I don't know where that line of thought's going, but it's something that I'm really curious about right now. Like what are we doing as an industry to solve this problem that we all acknowledge exists? But if we could just keep talking about the problem, it we're not really moving the needle. So I don't
Well,
know,
and
Adam, you seems like you want to
maybe,
react to that.
yeah, maybe to tie what Steven said to what you said, because Steven said the two industries that our industry most closely is tied to are hospitality and local government, right? Well, when you say that you were examining destination marketing organizations around the world, looking at their structure, what you probably found is something that mirrors local government quite a bit. And I think when you look at government in general, the idea of zero-based budgeting or zero-based structuring or first principles, sorry, wrong industry, right? Like it just doesn't happen there. And so the question is, how can we look at these organizations structurally and structure them more like a private organization that is responsible for its own financial success and sustainability? And the other thing that I would say is one of the big problems in our space is what we celebrate. We celebrate what I would call outcomes, and we don't examine what caused them. And I think one of the things that would really change the culture of our industry, and this goes back to some of the stuff Stephen was saying about risk aversion, if we celebrated the risk, not the risk that, or not the success that resulted from the risk, we could culturally change the complacency and risk aversion that's happening across the industry. But I've never, other than you and me, Stuart, we had Will Seckham come on the show and say, hey, I took this big risk, and here's the fallout that came from it. And OPS, I lost my job as a result, right?
Yeah, I don't know that Will was celebrating, but he was
No,
sharing.
no. And I don't know that we were either. We were more along the lines of why don't destinations take risks? How can we answer this? Well, I think part of the reason is nobody celebrates the risk. And in the event that an outcome from a risk is great, sweet, okay, let's celebrate the
Yeah,
outcome. But that's
I
not
don't
going to
know if
change a culture.
I agree, man. I don't know if celebrating the risk is the right thing because celebrating the outcome is to me, ultimately we're trying to achieve a goal, right? And whether we're measuring the quality of life of our residents somehow, whether we're measuring marketing performance, I think the end result is what matters. I think it's more of a problem as we celebrate outcomes that we didn't necessarily influence, right? And so our market's doing phenomenally well this year. It's awesome. It's great. Pat us on the back, give us some awards. Oh, well, this year our destination's not doing great. You know, it's not our fault. It's the economy. It's inflation. We point to external factors when things aren't going well, but we'll take all the 100% of the credit when things are going right. And so I think, myself included, that we as an industry tend to overinflate success. I think we tend to sugarcoat it and exaggerate it. I think if you really were able to deeply measure the impact you were having, any DMO, I think it's substantially less than you think it is. But I think we're so scared of that truth that we overinflate our success and we over attribute our influence on the success. And that's where I think we get into this trouble with distrust of the metrics, where we get negative commenters saying, criticizing us and trying to defund us. Because I don't think anyone's playing a clean game. I think we're stacking the deck in our favor dramatically. And we're really not trying to seek the truth. We're trying to seek justification for our existence. And I think that's setting the rules of the game in a way that's inevitably going to bite us in the butt down the line. I don't know, Stephen, if you see it that way or not.
No, absolutely. I think the most common behavior I see when I go to these industry conferences or I talk with my peers is it's a lot of fear mongering. So to Adam's point about this guest that you had earlier, where he talked about risk and talked about the fallout of risk, that's what we see across the board is this kind of don't do this, don't do that, because this is what happened to this person, and it's all going to blow up, and then the whole destination falls apart. Like, we are putting the onus on this one person for taking risk. And while I don't think I agree with you. Maybe we shouldn't exclusively focus on risk, but I think we should certainly encourage it because it's not just a complete failure across the board. And because of that fear, that risk mitigation, and I think that's a huge factor in the behavior we see from our industry peers. But I'd also say that a lot of it is comfort. You know, a lot of these folks have found a sweet spot in their destination where they get to influence without having too much of the pressure fall on them. Because a lot of the things that happen on our destination are out of our control. So they find a sweet spot. They stay there for a long time, decades even. They create relationships out of their tenure there, and those people become colleagues and then friends. And then these deals that could move the needle end up becoming pretty cliche, stereotypical, and it's just a signature on the line every renewal of the fiscal year. And so I think that's another factor that we see a lot of.
Do you think that's an incentives issue? Like, there's not really an incentive. Like, the incentives are structured in a way that, okay, I'm making a good living at a DMO, and if I sort of just carry on with the inertia that exists, everything's going to be fine. My stress level is going to be fine. I'm going to continue to make a living.
The incentive is don't
Versus
rock
if,
the boat.
right? Because if I take a swing, I might hit a home run, but that doesn't necessarily benefit me directly. It might benefit, you know, my purpose, but maybe if I don't hit that home run, it could be catastrophic for me and my career. Is that what you're saying, Stephen?
100%.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think there are, you know, the deeper I get into this industry, I've been in here 4 years now, I definitely don't feel like I'm a newbie anymore. When I first came here, I felt like there was a lot of sea of sameness. There's a lot of people playing it safe, and those were the people I was interacting. But I felt like as I've gotten here, I don't know if it's just I've met more people or that the industry is beginning to shift, but I feel like there's more people today that really are willing to take more of a risk and willing to shake it up. And I think they all have one thing in common, which is they're very good communicators, and they're very good at getting consensus and buy-in up front and explaining the rationale. Like what we've done with, say, a Charlie's Place or Traveling the Spectrum, is we didn't just go out and say, hey, we're going to create a podcast. We did a lot of foundational work with our board to tell them, hey, why is paid media potentially over time not the place we want to go all in? And why is owned media and storytelling a place where we're not sure if it's going to work, but if we don't try it, we're going to end up in a bad situation. And if we do try it and it works, then ultimately we could be in a much better position. And so giving us grace to take that risk and communicating to them up front. And I got to tell you, the first year or so of that was fairly easy. You know, we got a lot of nods, and even the second year of that was very easy. And then I'd say in around the third year, when the economy started turning and maybe our market wasn't performing as well as it had the previous 2 years, because they were the best 2 years we've ever had, and then we were seeing a bit of a normalization post-COVID, we started getting questions, right? And it wasn't necessarily direct at us, but we were hearing rumors. Hey, so-and-so saying this, or this person saying this. And it was sort of like, yeah, I'm wondering if these out there new campaigns are the right thing. Should we just get back to basics, right? So people always want a villain. So when things are going well, you have a lot more carte blanche to go and try this stuff. But when things get ugly, that's when people want to blame someone, and they're going to probably blame the things that they don't understand. So I've personally taken some hits. We as an organization have had to defend some of the risks we've taken, and some of them haven't worked out, I'll be the first to admit. But what allows us to continue is being good communicators in explaining the rationale. We don't hide from it. We don't try to cover it up. Like, if something doesn't work, we'll explain what the strategy was, why we tried it this way, what our assumptions were that maybe weren't correct that led to a bad outcome. But more importantly, how did we learn from that? And now, how can we apply that moving forward? But we got to be rooted in agreeing with our stakeholders, our board members, and our business community. We got to be rooted in what are our objectives here? How are we going to try to accomplish what we all want to accomplish as a community? So I think if you're a good communicator, it gives you that freedom to maybe take a few risks.
Yeah, Stuart, I want to maybe push back on where you went earlier in our discussion with the should we celebrate risk? And your response is, well, I don't think risk is necessarily what we should celebrate. We should celebrate outcomes. The question is, what are you actually trying to accomplish? Because we talked about how in this industry as a whole, at scale, the risk aversion is probably as high as any industry that's out there, right? And so if we don't celebrate risk at scale, what's going to happen is the incentives will remain the same, the risk aversion stays the same, the outcomes may or may not have been influenced by what the destination did, and we'll celebrate the outcomes and we'll still be in the same boat that we're in 10 years from now. My suggestion is every destination leader has a responsibility to first go prepare their stakeholders and say, we are going to take risks and we are going to make sure that whatever outcomes happen here, we either influence them for good or for bad, but we won't be able to say, oh, hey, we're up 4%, the industry's up 3%, yay, big win. No, we're going to take big swings. And then to go back, ingrain in the culture of the team a willing, which by the way, I think you specifically have done this really well in Myrtle Beach. You've told the team, we're going to do things different. We're going to shake things up. We're going to try things that are new and not that every other destination is doing. And now the deliverables match the expectations that you set with the stakeholders. And my only, I guess, rebuttal to what you're saying is that if we don't figure out how to incentivize and celebrate risk, the culture won't change. We might have individual organizations that do things a little bit different, but at scale, we're still going to be structured like local government and we're still going to behave like local government, and our incentives will be risk aversion.
Yeah, I worry though, because if your incentive is to celebrate risk, then you don't have the safeguards in place to keep you honest about what you're really trying to accomplish. Because we're not measuring success on how many risks we take, right? Because if that's what we celebrate, that was what might happen. And there's degrees of risk, right? There's
Sure.
appropriate risks, there's calculated risks, there's cavalier risks. And so I think we ultimately still have to be good stewards, right? And so we've got to be able to articulate, if we're going to take a risk, why are we taking this risk and why are we taking it now? And what are we doing to mitigate this risk? And what are we doing if this doesn't work out, right? We got to have all that mapped out and communicated, and so that all our stakeholders are aligned behind that. Because by its nature, risk sometimes is going to work and sometimes it's going to not. And we can't say, I'm going to take a big swing, I'm going all in on this one risk, right? That would be foolish. And I think if you celebrate the risks, there's an incentive to do that. So I
Well,
still
if
think
you
it's got to be
only
a,
celebrate risk, right? Like, I think what you're suggesting in a vacuum where the only thing we're celebrating is risk, when in fact, I think the person at a junior level of the organization that tried something crazy on social media and took a risk with what they posted on Instagram, we celebrate that because it was different. It wasn't
Well,
safe.
yeah, and maybe it's a semantics thing, right? Maybe if we tweak this a little bit, and maybe it's not the word celebrate, but maybe if we create a culture where there's not punishment for risk, right? Where risk is encouraged, where risks are something that are part of the culture versus not, and there's something we acknowledge and we talk about and we just discuss in the open versus something that we hide in a corner and we try to avoid and we try to brush under the carpet, right? So I don't know if celebrate is the right word, but I do understand what you're saying, which is you've got to normalize risk and you've got to create an environment where people are comfortable taking a risk. And so one of the things we do with our organization is no one will ever get in trouble for making a mistake. Like the first time you make a mistake, any kind of mistake, doesn't matter if it's costly or not costly, if you made a mistake, you're not going to get in trouble. And everyone knows this. Like, I will never tell you off. You will never be reprimanded for making a mistake. Now, if you didn't learn from that and apply, you paid the tuition, if you don't apply that education, then we might have a conversation about it. But everyone comes into work here knowing they can do their best job without fear of repercussion unless they're a serial perpetrator of the same mistake. And I think that's something that I'd like to see more DMOs. Now, the problem is the risk there is that if you're a CMO or if you're a president of a DMO and you have people underneath you and they put out something on social media, that they think is strategic or clever, or there's a reason they're taking this calculated risk, and then the wrong person sees it, you know, the wrong elected official sees it, it's not that individual that's necessarily going to get in trouble. And they probably didn't have the context to understand why it was a problem. But that person at the top is probably going to take the heat, right? So it's hard. You got to build trust, but you've also got to train and educate your people on what's an appropriate level of risk and what's an inappropriate level of risk, or at least train them so that they can raise their hand and say, hey, I'm not sure on this one. This is what I want to do. Can I do a gut check with you to see if there's any context I'm missing? So
I think you hit a lot of good points there, Stuart. And I do agree with you in the sense that I am seeing some more innovation in the industry. It seems like we're getting a little bit more growth of people who are willing to try some abstract attempts at their efforts, which is good to see. But I agree with you as well that you do need to build that trust, and communications are a part of that, because ultimately the interesting thing about our industry is that almost every aspect of what we do is out of our control. The way we're funded, the way the destination is presented, the perception of the destination, the attractions, the events. We don't really have a heavy hand in a lot of that other than being the steward of that message. And so we just have to kind of be open to letting that chaos occur, and how we interpret that and use that to our advantage is ultimately up to us. But it sounds like the way you structure your organization is similar to ours. When we had our new leadership come in,
hey, we found the two organizations structured the same. That's good.
Yeah, we got it. We solved the issue. When we brought in our new leadership, the North Star that we were told to go after is to look at this DMO as a startup. Don't look at it as a CVB that's been here since the dawn of time, that was, you know, formerly part of the chamber or trying to just capture conventions. We're here as a startup, which means we're here to take risks. We're here to try new things. And I think that language has been really encouraging for the organization overall, because it gives them that pass to say, I know that there's probably going to be mistakes. I know that I'm going to be allowed to try new things. And that's going to be embraced and encouraged. And so maybe to your point, the semantics shouldn't be so much on risk, but more on innovation and startup and that kind of mentality, because I think it does really motivate people to look at things outside of the box.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, we're going through this exercise a little bit right now, and we're just really beginning, and both on the chamber and the CBB side. And what I think we're realizing is there's a lot of things we're doing, a lot of places we're putting resources, time, and money into. When I dig and say, well, why are we doing this? No one can really articulate it beyond, we've been doing this, you know? We've been doing this for 50 years, and so this is what we do. And it's like, well, has anyone evaluated it in the last 5 years? Have we stopped to say, has the world changed in the last 5 years to where we're maybe not meeting the needs of our constituents or achieving the goals of our strategic priorities, you know? And so I think there is a lot of that sort of just inertia of playing it safe, being comfortable, and we're busy and we're doing the things, and we don't have an appetite to take on a lot more because we're all overworked, right? And so I like that. I like that startup energy sort of mentality. I think that's a rallying cry that people can get their head around and start to see things through a different lens. I'm probably going to steal it, Stephen, as we're going through this. So thank you.
Please do.
Yeah, that's neat. So what can you share with us? I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, Stephen. Is there anything? How long have you been with Visit Phoenix?
A little over 5 years now.
Okay, so you sort of got your legs on you're figuring out the lay of the land a little bit. Are there things in your recent history or in the future that you're particularly excited about, or the areas that you're focused in related to this conversation? Are there differentiators that you're really looking to capitalize on that you can share with our audience?
Well, I'd say from kind of like a 50,000 foot perspective, a lot of it is about innovation. So, you know, we went through an RFP process for a new creative agency last year. I explicitly put in the RFP, we are looking for bold and innovative messaging. And kind of in relation to what we've been discussing about risk aversion, the vast majority of the responses I received were not bold or innovative at all, just because of that comfortability. However, I did find an agency outside of our industry that has been knocking it out of the park in their efforts. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the results of that. And then, a lot of it really comes down to the distinctions of the destination you work in. So with mine in Phoenix, a lot of it has been a perception problem for a lot of years. We are a very large city. However, the perception of it being, metropolitan or urban is not necessarily there from a domestic perspective or even from an international perspective. And so it's really trying to find those opportunities to change that perception in new and bold ways. So creative work starts from the jump on that, but we have started creating merchandising because that's a really easy way to get brand recognition. We've kind of followed the drop culture of retailers like Nike and Supreme, tried those efforts. So really looking outside of the industry. Another one that I'm particularly proud of is we've started to establish in-kind sponsorships, because a lot of the time you hear from every single vendor, every single event in your destination saying, "Hey, can you support us? Hey, can you support us? Hey, can you support us?" You have very little resources to do so, and oftentimes, especially from an industry-wide perspective, if you're participating, then you've won. That seems to be the general messaging. I think it's time that we start thinking about ROI in our efforts. And so that's something I've really been aggressively pursuing that I encourage all DMOs to do. Having a seat at a table is not enough because you're going to end up being everything to everyone. And you're going to stretch yourself so thin that you're not going to know what to do with yourself. And so it's a matter of, sure, you got to show your value. You got to get that seat at the table, but you got to make sure you're getting something in return. Otherwise, you're just going to kind of get used or punched around like a punching bag. And so I think risk innovation is a big thing we need to be looking at. But I'd also say we need to be looking at how we're going to get a bang for our buck. We can't just keep
Interesting.
yes to everyone and, just accepting that for what it is. We need to find
Do
some
you
return.
have any success stories in that regard where it's sort of mean a win-win? Because I think that's something that our audience, everyone in the DMO world that I talk to could, I certainly could relate to that, that we're seen by a lot of our community stakeholders as either the bank or the infinite resource that they can lean on for every little problem they have that they should maybe be solving themselves in some cases. But we've never really approached it from that perspective where it's like, hey, well, I'll scratch your back, but I need you to scratch mine. So, have you got any examples of where that's maybe worked out pretty well?
Yeah, absolutely. There's several, but I'd say the lowest hanging fruit is advocacy for organizations. And so, some easy ways we've done that is we say, "Hey, we'll promote your stuff. We need you to promote us via your content marketing channels." So we'll highlight on social, get an email blast, get up our subscription numbers. Use things that are going to benefit your KPIs and your efforts that you have to report to your stakeholders. That's the lowest hanging fruit. I'd say some other ways we do it is we will ask them to cover, activation opportunities for us. So, hey, we'll support this venture. You got to let us activate at no cost, and you got to let us kind of wax poetic about our efforts. But anyway, essentially, where we are advocating for them and what they're doing, they need to do the same in extension. One particular example that has been working out really well is with our Economic Development Council. They have created their own campaign to try to attract new businesses to the destination, so on and so forth. And so they reached out to us because while they have a bunch of great content regarding economic development and the different industries that make the destination so great, they don't really have anything when it comes to culture, food, shops, people. Well, that's kind of our bread and butter in the DMO industry. And so what we've done as an exchange is we'll provide you all of this cultural content, But guess what? That economic development content benefits us, especially from a sales and a meetings and convention perspective. And so any kind of content we provide them, we get just as much back in their area of expertise. And
That's
so
great.
because, the DMO is all things to all people, let's get some of the stuff that they're churning out and see how we can use it to our advantage.
Sounds like radical collaboration. I love it. That's really neat. Well, we're getting short on time. But Stephen, I really appreciate you bringing this topic to the show. I think our audience will get a lot out of the conversation we've had today, and we'd love to have you back on the show at some point if you got more you want to add to this conversation, or if you have other pet peeves and more love letters you want to write to the industry. So before we let you go, are there any final thoughts, takeaways, or anything that we missed today that you'd like to share with the destination out there?
No, I mean, thank you for the time and letting me vent with y'all. I think this was a really a great discussion to have. But yeah, I just encourage all of our peers in the industry to keep taking risks. Don't get comfortable because there's a lot of potential out there, and we need to take the opportunity.
Just keep
Amen.
innovating. I love it. Well, Stephen, if they want to find you, they want to reach out, learn more about you, or visit Phoenix, how can they do that?
Shoot me an email. That's available to find on our website, visitphoenix.com, but it's just stotten@visitphoenix.com.
Awesome, Stephen. You've been stellar today. You've been way above average, unlike my co-host Adam. Adam, any final thoughts? Any pearls of wisdom?
My kind of takeaway from this conversation is it just solidifies I would much rather if I was in the destination seat, which, obviously I'm, as you would say, an evil vendor, Stuart. But if I was in the seat at a destination, I would much rather go down swinging than have somebody question the value I brought and me not be able to articulate anything different than the norm that I did that brought value to the community. And so I hope everybody that's listening is willing to take a big risk. And you know what? That may mean a negative outcome for you, but I've got a good friend who did something amazing at the destination she was with. And even though they didn't see the value, she parlayed that into an incredible opportunity where she's just thrived. And so I think personal development, you must be willing to take the risk, to take the swing. And hopefully people take that away from the conversation today.
Adam, I know who you're talking about. We may need to get her on the show. So I think that would be a
I've been
good.
trying. I've been trying.
Yeah.
She's been a little gun shy, but we'll get her. We'll get her on the
All
show.
right. Yeah. It's a phenomenal story. Well, thank you, Adam, for being slightly above average today. I'll give you that by the end of the show. Yeah, this has been really good. I think for me, one of the big takeaways is maybe even the semantics of reframing. I love Stephen talking about innovation versus risk taking, because I think risk is going to. It's going to trigger that fear mechanism in us. And I do feel like fear is one of our biggest motivators or demotivators in the industry. And I totally understand why. And I feel it too at times. And my instinct sometimes when we get criticized or maybe when things aren't performing well is to sort of scurry back into the sea of sameness and to go do what everyone else is doing. But if we reframe it as, hey, our destination is going to innovate, I think our stakeholders will probably rally behind that a little more than if we say we're going to take a risk. So I
So you
just,
can celebrate it, not just normalize it, if it's innovation.
yes, yeah, I think so. I think we can celebrate innovation, right? Because there's connotations to that beyond risk. So
I like it.
it's about staying current and staying ahead and all that stuff. So whereas risk doesn't always connote those things. So no, I love it. I appreciate the conversation. If you want to continue this conversation, if you want to join this conversation, if you want to have a slightly different conversation or something completely out of left field, then please reach out to us. You can get in contact with me at stuart.butler@visitmaltabeach.com. And don't forget, if you leave a comment or review, then Adam has promised he's going to send you millions of dollars worth of swag. Is that what you said? Oh, no, some dollar denomination worth of merchandise.
Well, let me tell you, the swag that I will be handing out is so valuable that you're
It's
probably
priceless.
correct.
It's
Yeah.
priceless. Yeah. In monetary actual value, we're not giving anyone $1 million. So don't try to sue us or hold us accountable to that. But
And Stephen, I've got one for you when we come to Phoenix.
in personal
Welcome.
value, it could be priceless. Yeah. So and thank you for tuning in. Subscribe, tell a friend, and until next time, you've been listening or watching Destination Discourse. Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody. you've kind of turned me into the clown show here at the end of every episode.
Correct.